Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva. And on this episode, we'll continue our discussion with Dr. Robert Dean and Katie Davis on advancing team culture. So what approaches and actions that we've learned need to continue?
As I look back on the past few months, I think there have been some silver linings to the pandemic and how we're working through it. And communication is right up there in terms of one of the things that we've changed and we've really improved. We've seen organizations have much more frequent and transparent communications with their workforce, going from virtual town halls to daily updates on the intranet to push emails, to leadership rounding and high visibility of leaders within the organization on the front lines with those clinicians that are taking care of these patients on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis. So that's been a tremendous improvement in many of the organizations we've seen across the country. Agility. Katie's mentioned this a couple of times. Organizations, teams, and individuals have all become more agile to adapt and create solutions to the challenges presented by the COVID pandemic. And I think this is true not only for delivery organizations, but even if you look within our own company, there's been a serious breaking down of silos, people working together to serve the members in ways they hadn't worked together before. So I think there's been some things that really shine within this time of crisis. And I think many of these will probably be here to stay. I hope as leaders, we nurture those to stay and build on that foundation moving forward.
One of the things we've seen from teams that have really adapted as well as possible to the situation that we're in, really two-way communication is so critically important. So a lot of the innovative ideas that have helped organizations adapt as well as they have come from the folks that are on the front lines. And so not only communication from leadership, which is of the utmost importance, like Robert mentioned, either daily or weekly meetings, town halls, frequent communication, which is absolutely necessary, but also a forum for those that are on the front lines to share their ideas, their feedback. And then really, when we think about it, we're talking about the team at sort of the micro level with the patient, family caregiver, and the providers. But you also need to think about the organization, the staff as a whole really functioning as a much, much larger team. And in order for that to happen, communication is so critical. And I think when that goes well, organizations become very agile.
Yeah, I get that. But a challenge to team-based care is where we're reluctant to talk about, much less deal with, the disruptive team member. We've all experienced this in our career. So what can be done about that?
So Tom, great point. And I think too many of us have experienced this, unfortunately. I found in some reading that 1 in 4 team members believe that disruptive behaviors are positively correlated with patient mortality, which is kind of an alarming anecdote. But really, the starting point is that leaders need to be aware of what toxic behaviors to look for. Staff need to have a way to share feedback with leadership. So that goes back to some of the two-way communication so that staff are empowered to speak up when they identify those toxic or disruptive behaviors. I'm sure many folks listening, myself, Tom, and Robert, I'm sure in your clinical practice, unfortunately, too many of us have someone that comes to mind that is a toxic team member. And that can be infectious. You know, if you have a toxic team member, it can disrupt the flow of the entire team and can really, really do a lot of harm.
I agree. And you really have to have a clear understanding of what accepted behaviors are within your organization and what is not acceptable in terms of behaviors. I think when you have a disruptive clinician, whether it's a physician, nurse, PA, first you have to ask yourself why. Is there something that's really pushing this person's buttons? And as an organization, do we need to do something different? It's easy to blame the person. I think it's harder for an organization to really examine themselves, but that's necessary. Once you've done that, you really need to work with that person. It's not one strike and you're out, but clearly they have to understand there's ramifications to their behavior. And ultimately, if it continues, if you do not address it, it will be like a burning ember that you haven't noticed, but soon consumes the whole house. And I think many of us have been in a situation where we've seen a highly talented clinician. I'm a former chief medical officer. I've had highly talented cardiac surgeons, neurosurgeons, but their behaviors were such that we couldn't keep them in the organization. And ultimately, we had to tell them that we just had to sever the relationship. They could no longer work there because they were so detrimental to the environment, to patient care, and really to our reputation as a healthcare organization. So I think understanding, introspection, laying out clear rules, and ultimately taking action if need be.
Robert, I agree. And just to follow up, I think there are a couple of approaches we can think about at three different levels when you're dealing with disruptive or toxic behavior. Robert, you mentioned organizational level, having zero tolerance policies, implementation of things like 360-degree feedback, skip level evaluations, even formal training to underscore accepted behaviors versus those that are not going to be tolerated. There's also a way to involve the team in mitigating toxic or disruptive behavior. And that can be even including staff in the hiring process or in the selection of new team members. One of the biggest things that I've come across in reading about toxic and disruptive behavior is the identification of toxic protectors is a really interesting concept. So sure, many of us can recall a disruptive colleague or team member, but if you think on that, is there somebody that maybe defended their behavior or discounted any concerns that may have been raised? And that person can be equally as disruptive as sort of the instigator, if you will. So that can be another way to think about things. And then also, as Robert mentioned, management at the individual level, either through performance feedback or coaching, can be ways to address anyone on the team that is exhibiting toxic behavior. I think another important point to make around toxic behavior is this sort of goes hand in hand with the psychological safety that teams really need to feel if they want to be able to bring their best selves to work. And if you have somebody on the team that can undermine or second guess or really not welcome or encourage questions that really can be very, very fruitful for a team, that can be really disruptive. So thinking about supporting psychological safety kind of goes hand in hand with managing and ensuring that toxic and disruptive behaviors are not tolerated.
Yeah, Katie, I really like your point about identifying the condoning behavior because it really enables and allows us to continue without addressing it as it needs to be addressed.
Do you have any examples of that?
Oh, I would say many, many times when there's a disruptive behavior in an operating room, the team or the scrub tech or the nurses, anesthesiologist that works with the surgeon on a continuing basis may just find it easier to accept the behavior, may find it easier to protect that person from any negative results from the behavior because they want to continue to work with them. I think an organization many times can say this is one of our most productive physicians, surgeons in terms of bringing revenue into the organization and condoning the behavior. So yeah, unfortunately, I think there are multiple examples at multiple levels and it happens every day.
I agree, unfortunately, certainly not examples that any of us want to be able to share. In the work that I did and continue to do with our Vizient AACN Nurse Residency Program, we survey new graduate or newly licensed registered nurses in their first year of practice. We read comments year after year from the tens of thousands of nurse residents that go through this program about resistance from preceptors to their questions, feeling belittled, being made to feel that their questions are inappropriate or really sort of a clinical environment where discussion and conversation isn't welcome, which is really, really a scary thing if you think about the implications to patient outcomes and patient safety. I alluded to a member survey that we conducted earlier of our Vizient membership, and we actually asked this question, what are some characteristics that you, being our members, have seen of, you know, a disruptor or somebody exhibiting toxic behaviors? And a couple key words and phrases really stuck out to me that I wanted to share. First, crave singular recognition, mistrust, shutting down those that try to speak up, and lack of empathy. And so those characteristics really, I think, speak very loudly and paint a picture of someone that many of us, unfortunately, can probably picture or think of in a past team environment.
So how do you build a foundation for a team-based culture? I mean, what goes into that?
I think it starts with leadership, with developing the communication channels, developing the expectations, really living the values of the organization and exemplifying those. So ultimately, it begins with leadership and setting the expectations of what's acceptable, what's not, how to communicate, putting patients at the center of all we do, and then developing that in terms of norms. You know, really, we're going to work together. We respect each other. We value what each of us bring to taking care of patients and to having the organization serve our community. So for me, it begins with effective communication from leadership, showing and living the values, being out there in front, transparent, doing those things, and then really exemplifying what it is we want to achieve as a team.
Robert, I agree. And I'll add to that. When we think about leadership, having a strong foundation of a team-based culture does start with leadership. You can assess what kind of language you as a leader might be using when you address your staff or colleagues at the organization. Is it us versus them? Or are you speaking in a more inclusive manner using words like we and us? Other things from a leadership perspective that I think send a clear message around what the culture is as it relates to the team include compensation methodology, and then, of course, promotion of an inclusive environment. I was really surprised to see that almost 30% of organizations put inclusion and diversity efforts on hold at the start of the pandemic. And if you think about promoting a team culture, that is something that really cannot be pushed to the wayside.
Robert and Katie, thanks for joining us. We're at the end of part two. In part three, we're going to bring you back to explore in greater detail how to look into team culture a little further. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice Podcast on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.